Hi, we're going to start. Very loud. Good morning, everyone. This thing was off the last time I looked at it. So this is the Control Framework Working Group. We have two topics today that we're going to talk about, both of which are kind of very much cross-cutting across the different control framework projects. And both of which have been heavily discussed, I think, in some of the projects. One of the things that's interesting about this whole exercise is that different projects are really emphasizing different things. So the first part of this is RSpecs, which is, RSpecs have historically been kind of the rug of Genie into which you can sweep stuff when you don't want to think about it. So we've done some of that, and now people are starting to think about it. Larry's going to run that half of the discussion. He's going to talk for a little bit, and then we'll just have an open mic. And then we're going to segue into security architecture, which has a little bit more structured agenda. And I'll talk to introduce that when we get to it. No, you're up.
I thought you won my slides because you were going to. You want power. Okay. So we're going to spend an hour talking about RSpecs. My apologies to everyone in Cluster B who has, like me, spent 2 days talking about RSpecs and are probably completely burned out thinking about RSpecs. We actually came to a couple of points of resolution in Cluster B, but we have a really interesting question on the table that we don't have an answer to, but so I will, amongst all of these comments, throw that out on the table and everyone comment. I have just a few slides, and then I'm going to open the floor. I know there are lots of opinions, so I hope to hear them. What I wanted to try to do is make some statements that I think are universally true, and then you can tell me whether I've missed some or whether some of these are not in fact true, and you believe that it's the wrong design principles for RSpecs. And then it would be good to hear about different people's strategies. Tactically, how do we go from where we are today to having a fully robust set of RSpecs? So I thought I would start with a plea. And the plea is to note that the problem is already hard enough, so we should all resist the temptation to make it even harder. John? Okay, John says it's as hard as it is, and he's absolutely right. So I want to solve no problem before it's time. And we've been doing a pretty good job of that. We've been sweeping a lot of complexity into the RSpec and making progress, even though we know this giant problem exists. And so this is really about how do we start to make progress without biting this thing off all at once. And that's a little bit about heading down the right path. And so I wanted to try to get us going down the right path, and hence the design principles. So I have four rules that I think capture what we ought to be doing with RSpecs. And you've heard these in various forms before, and here they are again in maybe slightly different words. If you look through the architecture document at the proposed interfaces as to how to create and manage slices on all of these resources, you'll see that the RSpec shows up as an argument in a couple of cases. When you go and request resources, you say, here is what I would like. And when you ask the system, what resources do you have, it might say, here is what I have. And those are two opportunities to say blah, where blah is a fairly complicated thing. The first rule is to not try, is to do something minimal, which I could have used the hourglass here, although the hourglass rule actually shows up in different guises in different places. So I called this a thousand flowers rule. which is what we want to do with our specs, is to limit them to the minimal statement I need to make to reserve resources. This is not discovering every last word about a device, but those things that are reservable. We have to allow ourselves the possibility that there are many other kinds of statements that we can make to express what a researcher needs. They can be extremely high-level statements, but they are quite far removed from the essential low-level thing, which is, here's a resource, I would like 12 of them, please, may I have them? And if you restrict yourself to asking for resources but allowing other high-level expressions of need, then I think you're headed down the right path. Likewise, there may be multiple languages by which I can express the properties of a device. But again, those properties may or may not be reservable resources. I might want to tell you that this particular device lives at a certain latitude and longitude. That's a description of a device, but it's not something I would necessarily reserve. Well, it might be if I reserved it in a very high level, but again, I'm trying to reduce this to what it is on a device that I actually ask for. I ask for memory, I ask for disk space, and I ask for bandwidth, and so on. The observation is that he who invents the best matching process between what I would express for resources and what I need and what I have is going to rule the world here. This is going to be the Uber interface to all of Genie, but let's not try to solve that problem here. So limit ourselves to reserving resources and allow those in the room that want to go off and invent higher level abstractions. Power to them. That's a problem, though, that I don't want to solve right now. So I'm going to hit these rules, and then there'll be time to comment. Rule number two is the do-it-yourself rule. We need to limit the scope of our specs to operations that require privilege. So when you think about going out there and acquiring a programmable mumblefratz, there may be lots and lots of things I have to say to it to get it configured right to run my experiment. Don't confuse all those statements I make to configure the device with the RSpec. Minimally, I have to ask the device for some resources, and there's an arbitrator that says you do or do not get the resource. Privilege is involved. If there's a limited number of the resources, or in any way it takes privilege to acquire the resource, then that is fair game to stick into an RSpec, because it's the statement that I make to cause the control part of the system to give me resources. As soon as I've required the resources, I am free to program them to my heart and configure it to my heart's content without any additional intervention by an arbitrator. So if I want a programmable network processor or a programmable channel, say, of some kind, I might require privilege to acquire the channel, but then configuring it and downloading code into it and everything else I do to it to make it behave the way I want is something I can do myself and should not be part of the RSpec. Rule three, keep it simple, stupid. Resist speculative feature creep. So my litmus test is, do you have an implementation? And now I'm on a soapbox I've been on many times before. My apologies. If it is extremely easy to speculate as to what a device might or might not do, a device that you only imagine building but don't actually have one around, and you only imagine controlling. And so I think this is a pretty good rule that stood the test of time in the internet. Let's see an implementation. As soon as you have a piece of code that works that needs a piece of a privileged operation to acquire some capability on it, then that's something we better get into the RSpec. But if it's only speculative, what if I had a device and then you imagine the most pathological scenario? Okay. Let's save that discussion for sometime in the future. Likewise, we need to avoid excessive precision. I've been involved in discussions where you can imagine extremely complicated statements of relationships between the bus and the network card and memory. And no, that's way, way more precision that matters in the larger scheme of things. It's a node. Okay, that's what I mean by precision. Don't tell me the details that make no difference to an experiment that's running on the internet, because exactly how the bus is connected to the PC, to the network interface card probably makes no difference in the larger scheme of things. And a final related point is to keep simple specifications simple. If I just want to get a bunch of nodes to run an overlay experiment on, like I might want to do in PlanLab, then it ought to be extremely easy to express that. I shouldn't be encumbered by every other thing that you have to know to configure a much more complicated experiment on a layer two network somewhere else. And number four, inheritance rules. There's an awful lot of opportunity to leverage commonality and natural hierarchy, and we need to strive towards those. We need to support nesting and stacking. Networks very naturally stack in certain ways. We have layers all the way down, and we need to take advantage of that in the way we express our specs, and it ought to be possible to not know anything about the hidden pieces of the hierarchy that I have nothing to do with. We should be striving towards consolidating commonality into base classes or subclasses. In fact, I say it in the fourth bullet. This is an ongoing process. This is not something we're going to define today and we're going to be done. We are going to have to establish some kind of standardization process by which three people stand up and say, but I need this capability in the RSpec, this kind of resource description. And someone else says, you know what, those are the same, let's just do it once. And that synthesis is going to happen over and over, and so we're going to have to establish processes here. It's not going to be something that we solve and then go build it. I guess the point I jumped over there is we need to allow device specialization. So you need private namespaces, if you will, to specialize your device, some kind of subclass. Inheritance, again, is a technique that will help us. But we ought to be driving the system as much as we can towards moving things into a common core. All right, those are the four rules, or four groupings of rules. Let me go ahead and just, two final slides. Just as an example of a kind of, some strategies one might take, here are some things that we've done in Planet Lab. We have devised a fairly complicated RSpec that we're using in our prototyping work that is sufficiently rich to reserve resources on Vini, which allows you to set up circuits, dedicated circuits between nodes, something you can't do in Planet Lab because there's just a bunch of nodes running on the internet. But it's designed in such a way that if all you wanted to do was go out and reserve a bunch of Planet Lab nodes, you get to use the very same RSpec, and it turned out to be trivial. A whole bunch of empty fields and a list of nodes that you wanted in your overlay. So I think that's the kind of strategy that we should be looking for, that simple things remain simple. Second, there's an inherent problem in knowing what kinds of things to ask the system for and what kind of policies the system's going to enforce. And this is an example of, I don't want to solve that problem yet because I have no idea what the right policies are going to be. And so we have a very brain-dead strategy here, which is you ask the system what the right answer is. So in the language of the proposed interface, you call get resources and you ask it, what is the default RSpec? And basically the system says to you, the aggregate says to you, if you come back and ask me for these resources, I would happily give them to you. So it gives you the answer. Then you come back in the second argument and create the slice with that answer. And just to confirm you got what you asked for, you can do the get resources call again, and you'll get back the allocated RSpec, and it ought to be what you ask for. So this lets us get up and running with a full-blown RSpec without having solved the entirety of the problem of what's the good policy. The policy is tell the user what you will accept and then accept it. And now on that basis, we can start building in exceptions and a richer policy. The third strategy point here is we're all inclined to start speaking XML to each other because that's obviously the right answer. The observation that XML is only a representation format, and it's probably not the right level of abstraction to define our specs. What we've done is we define a data model within the Eclipse modeling framework, and then we generate the code. We generate code from that, both internal Python code that we use in the implementation, and from that we generate the XML that goes over the wire. EMF may or may not be the right thing. It's a reasonable alternative here, but from a strategy point of view, I think it's a good idea to find one or more modeling frameworks and to do our work at that level instead of the XML level. Finally, one last point is I think we all understand that this is an exercise in shifting the complexity around. So we've shoved all the complexity under the RSpec rug, and now we're peeking under the rug and we're trying to figure out where to move it to next. And what we came to discover in the Cluster B meeting, spend a bit of time on this, is that there are two different strategies, if you will, to managing this complexity. Strategy one, which is roughly the strategy I've been defining, the one that we have been using in our prototyping work, is hide all the complexity in a giant, ugly data structure that you'd never want to look at with, you know, with human eyes. It has nested in it everything you'd want to know. We give you a set of tools so that you can go change the fields you want to, so that the easy things are in fact easy. But the complexity is hidden in a giant data structure. Okay, that's option A. Option B is to hide the complexity in the interface, and in fact to discover that interface incrementally. So I'm going to call this the WSDL approach, which is basically that get resources call that I showed you a minute ago that returns this giant RSpec that you are then free to go edit. It doesn't return an RSpec. What it basically, you could think of it returning, is a list of capabilities that this device exports, including other calls that I can make on the device to ask it more and more questions. So there'll be a very simple starting point from which I learn more information about the device, allowing me to go back and ask additional questions, incrementally learning what it is I need to know. So if I'm doing something simple, I never have to learn any more than I needed to know. If I'm doing something complex, I need to go back to the device multiple times and ask it all kinds of questions. So in terms of the complexity, either the complexity is hidden in a giant data structure and you need tools to help you find your way through the data structure, or the complexity is hidden in an interactive set of queries that I do to incrementally learn what I want to know, and clearly there's complexity that you have to deal with to do that. I don't know how to make the complexity go away. All that I would argue here is that we need to find the right balance so that we have to deal with no more complexity than is absolutely necessary. And with that, I'll open the floor for both comments on the rules or strategies or whatever.
Is this on? I like your rules. Can you go to the rule one? So it sounds to me, if I understand this correctly, that by limiting what you're doing with the RSpec to the process of reservation, so I've been thinking of RSpecs of something that is used for both discovering capabilities and for reserving resources. And it sounds like you are really putting the focus on reserving the resources. And so I'm wondering how you see, you know, a node, you know, I may be reserving things in the quanta of nodes, but I might want to know how much storage is on that node or how fast it is. And do you see, are the hooks for finding that out contained in the RSpec? Is that a completely separate process?
So I forgot to mention there is another, so solve no problem before it's time is maybe another version of that is break the complexity down into bite-sized chunks. So I view the process of learning every last fact there is to know about a node as a separable problem, and that there could potentially be different tools involved in doing that. And so, for example, to use a PlanetLab example, there is a tool, it's a service that runs on PlanetLab that reports, I don't know, 40 or 50 facts about machines. Come on. And it can tell you static information like which OS, which kernel it's running, and dynamic information like what was the 1 minute load average. And those kinds of, that's a separate problem. So I'm calling that a separate problem. I could build a higher level service, this would be my sub-bullet two, that takes a combination of what's learnable through RSpecs and what's learnable through a variety of monitoring discovery tools and puts that together. I may or may not want to borrow the format and the syntax of the RSpec to do that. But I'm separating that out, yeah.
Okay. So let me just suggest that people come up here rather than pass the microphone all over.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
People make a line.
Make a queue.
They don't have any mics.
Really? Hi. So I guess there are two kinds of issues to tackle here, and I want to know how PlanetLab is dealing with those two issues right now. The first one is that of taxonomy. So when I say PC 600, how does it float around different clusters? Or in the Planet Lab case, if you have different installations, just like how Protogini has, I'm not sure how Planet Lab deals with those kind of things. And the second issue is that of identifiers. So when I say device ID 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, what does 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 mean? And stuff like that. So the taxonomy and the identifiers.
So taxonomy in the ID space? What was your label for this? I think I understood it, but I didn't hear your label for the...
Oh, taxonomy is one thing, and the identifiers is the other thing.
Okay. So the RSpec that Planet Lab defines, the genification of Planet Lab defines something called a slice manager, which is the thing that a user would interface with. In another world, it's called a clearinghouse, all right? I go to it with an RSpec that is full of stacked information, nested information. The slice manager, and now there's a little bit of a philosophical discussion in here as to how smart a slice manager needs to be. The slice manager knows how to break that apart. And it knows this subpiece is going, in fact, is labeled Planet Lab or Vinny or whatever, needs to be shipped off to the aggregate manager for further resolution. So I think the answer, a general version of the answer to your question is through nesting, that's done. Now, you also asked the question about how do I say which one of five different identical things? And the answer there is one of punting to a higher level. So that when you get to the RSpec, I am in fact reserving node number 4 and this resource. I will have to discover that there were 12 identical nodes and ask for 4, and that's going to take help from someone who knows they're identical, and that I'm pushing into a higher level problem. By the time you get to an RSpec that Planet Lab understands, you've reduced it to something concrete.
Couple things. First of all, I hadn't actually planned to say this, but it sounds to me like part of what you're doing there is the work that the kind of thing that is done by people who say they're doing ontology convergence, which is I've got many different definitions of things that are probably pretty similar, and what do I do? What is the functionality that causes me to be able to figure out whether or not they're the same? That's enough the same that I can view them as the same. But the thing I actually really wanted to ask you about, and maybe this is in there and I just missed it because I was, tired or something, but it strikes me that different kinds of researchers using Genie are going to have very different qualities of requests that they're making, I guess is the best way of saying it. So the freshman who's taking a networking course is just looking for a node. Whereas the researcher who's doing something that's very complicated and maybe has to do with complicated routing tables actually may care a lot about how much memory is on that machine. So they'll have very different kinds of queries they ask, and they really probably don't want to get a response that it would have been the appropriate answer to the other one.
Yep, I completely agree with that. So in response to your comment, yes, I hadn't heard the term ontology convergence, but that's exactly what I intended by
the consolidating.
Okay,
there are people doing that. Yeah. In the ontology corner of the computer science universe.
And in with respect to what I want to say as a student taking a class, never having seen this before, and a researcher who's been doing this for a long time, that's exactly my 1,000 flowers. There will be many different ways that I express. This is novice to newbie to expert. Many different ways that I want to express my needs, what I need. And the expert is going to want to see something at a lower level, and so that ought to be supported by one person's tool. And in fact, at the lowest level, it is an RSpec with no veneer on the top. And to somebody else, it's going to be a very, very high-level statement. And that's, I don't think you can solve that with a single solution, and hence, again, a punt. Someone invents a different set of higher-level services.
Okay, great. Thanks.
So my initial question would have been on how do you actually capture constraints on resources?
I didn't know this was going to turn into question answer.
Okay. how to capture the constraints among resources. But given what you just said before, is that you're actually saying that that's not really your problem, that's somebody else's problem to solve. And at the time, when it comes to ASPEC, those have been already resolved, and you just basically been reduced to resources which are...
What's your canonical... So this is about constraints among resources. Great question. So what is your canonical example of a constraint?
Wireless nodes, let's say, in a room in here.
So it's location of those wireless nodes.
And the characteristics of the radio they're using. So if a node transmits, it affects all the resources around it.
So I actually have two answers, kind of. One answer is yes. There will be many, many properties of devices that I would not put in the RSpec, and even if some of them were in the RSpec anyway, that I would push to a higher level, saying a constraint solver of some kind. And that's no different than the constraint solver that said I needed one node per continent, or you know, whatever that kind of statement. So that's the first part of the answer. And so I think there's an open question here. Are there constraints that can only be learned through some authoritative data that comes out of an RSpec? And I don't have a definitive answer. This is now just the direction I would push. The other issue is, I was sort of getting at with this point, avoid excessive precision. And certainly your wireless nodes in the same room or the same whatever is not an example of this, but there are constraints and relationships between devices that I have heard that are far more precise. You know, we're talking about trying to give me a measurement in nanometers when I know that I can measure it no better than centimeters. That just don't make sense. And so that's just sort of, I guess, an aside. I guess the main answer is I would push it to a higher level.
But isn't it a fundamental thing, because it actually affects the isolation among experiments? Because it needs to... Okay,
so the isolation comes down to, did it take privilege to say yes or to give you what you wanted? And it doesn't take privilege, it doesn't require privilege to make the connection, oh, these two nodes satisfy some constraint. So I think that's what it boils down to me. If it required privilege on somebody's part to say whether the constraint was satisfied or not, then it becomes a candidate for pushing down into the RSpec by my definition, and I may or may not have given you enough power to express that in the RSpec. Well, I haven't given you an RSpec, I've only given you some rules, but in the RSpec that we have defined in our prototyping, the only constraints that we support are the ones that are implicit in the natural order of things in a network. That is, how things, nodes are connected to links. That's a constraint that I would need to express. But that's sort of expressed naturally because the way that we've prototyped the RSpec, nodes and links connecting is the only constraint we understand, or the only relationship we understand, not constraint, but relationship.
I guess in the wireless world, we have spectrum for us, spectrum is a resource we reserve.
Absolutely. So you're going to have to go to someone with privilege, an arbitrator, and say, and ask for spectrum. So the spectrum is going to have to be. You're going to have to make a statement about spectrum in the RSpec. Yes. But that's different than saying.
But that's why, for me, fundamentally, RSpec as a taxonomy alone is not sufficient. Because it's technically it's possible to express relationships, but it's not a natural.
Are you guys going to comment on the same topic? Let's rotate through here and see if someone else can shed some light on this.
So I thought at first that what you were saying was that you needed to discover where the spectrum was available as opposed to reserve the spectrum. And so the thought that I had was that the pile of stuff under the discovery rug is getting larger as the RSpec pile is getting smaller.
I would expect most piles to get. Perfect. And one reason I think that's the right thing to do. All right, so I am punting as much as I can to the discovery problem. And one reason is that...
Who's discovery? Which group is discovery?
Well, the nice thing about it is that the end, ultimately...
Good. No, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I'm pointing to the right to the service people back there, but ultimately the user, the researcher, is going to be part of that loop. And that's part of what makes it hard, because we can imagine, for 1,000 researchers, we can imagine 1,000 things that they're going to ask for in completely different ways. So having a human in a loop is part of what we need to address that complexity. And the corollary to that is users are smarter than we give them credit for.
But that's because we give them so much
I'm
credit.
Sorry. There will be, no, actually I stick to that one. These are researchers, so they're smart, right? If you're motivated to acquire resources for your research, you will dig through everything you have to dig through to figure out how to do it. I actually don't think researchers require all that sophisticated of resource discovery. Now, that starts to break down when we have a bazillion devices out there. And then I am working at a much, much coarser grain description. And so I think there's a constant level of complexity the user has to deal with.
So let's go back to this reserving. I want 10 wireless nodes that don't interfere. That's the constraint question, right?
I want 10 wireless nodes that don't interfere.
Right. Right, right. So it seems, and you want to punt that, which I, believe me, I'm a punter. I'm in love with that. And I like the crisp point that the only stuff that should be in an RSpec is what I need to reserve something. I think that's I live for a good rule, so I think that's a good rule. So it seems to me you need one of two things. You either need to be able to express in the RSpec this statement, don't conflict with each other, or you need to be able to name individual nodes rather than just describe them. I mean, I liked your answer to this fellow's question about, well, if I've got five nodes, how do I pick node four? Well, how could you tell if it was node four if they're identical? That's good. But this might be a case in which you'd want to be able to actually export identifiers. Because if you export the identifiers into a service that calculates interference, it could say the following 10 don't interfere, and then you could come back to your node and actually give it the 10 nodes you want. But it seems like you've either got to capture, either the node manager's got to be able to calculate which don't interfere, or the node or somebody else has got to be able to pick them from the list. Do you see what I'm saying? That makes sense?
Maybe.
Somebody's got to decide they don't interfere. Either I've got to be able to express it in the RSpec and have the component manager make the decision, or I've got to be able to tell the component manager, I've figured
Can
out...
Can we come up with a second example?
Of
constraints that require privilege. And this one is debatable because I could...
So I don't think it requires... The problem is... I mean, it doesn't require privilege to... Somebody's got to pick. And I need to actually be able to export that enough information to either let this thing pick for me, let the manager pick for me, or push it out to discovery, let discovery pick the nodes, and then be able to go back to the manager and say, these are the specific nodes I want. You've got 100 of them that all have the same attributes, but these are the specific ones
right.
I've picked.
You know, at the end of the day, I'm going to employ a variant of the end-to-end problem. At the end of the day, it's up to the researcher as to whether these nodes satisfies his or her definition of non-interference.
It's a
trust but verify. You through the discovery process, you figure out the best answer you can get. You could argue that a privileged arbitrator could have optimized that process, maybe not. But now I have an answer. I run my experiment. I observe what's
yeah.
happening, and I decide whether the results are valid or not based upon my observations.
Well, so
and
actually,
I don't care what you've asked for. You there is always the opportunity that something interfered that you weren't.
No, you're right, and the end-to-end principle does apply here, and I think that's good. So I think the thing to expose is the ability to. I think you want to expose identifiers like he was talking about before. Even though these 10 nodes are identical, I've done some analysis somewhere else, and I know which of the 10 meet my constraints, whatever, and I've got to be able to pick my own constraints, and then I'll ask for them. Okay, good. Then I'll sit down.
Next.
This is a great discussion. We had it 2 years ago. You may remember this. I suggest that we try to find our notes, because then we could be done. The split model works. I mean, there's a little nuance going on here, but if you take advertising out of the RSpecs, which is what you're calling discovery, right? There's some data structure that drives discovery.
I'm sorry. I would take it in its most general form out. It is still possible to advertise an RSpec.
Yeah. But this additional information, yeah. Right? So you follow that thread, and things almost work. The place where you run into an interesting bit of nuance here is when you have constraints that you want to be able to override under some circumstances, right? So the spectrum constraint's kind of interesting because you want non-interference except when my experiment requires interference, but maybe I need privilege to do that, or I'm doing the fault analysis constraint where I'm going to actually configure two resources that intentionally both drive the fiber and it probably catches fire, but it's okay because I've got a privilege bit and something like that. So there is some notion of being able to sort of override the normal constraints using privilege, and this gets to this very quickly gets you into sort of the error recovery model. Is it the case that an RSpec assignment is supposed to be able to detect when tell you that you did something wrong if your discovery fails, right? And you tried to ask for something that's constrained, and you got the right you got the fabulous answer, and then you tried the RSpec assignment, and actually it was an unfortunate circumstance that caused nodes to catch on fire. Is that supposed to give you an error message or catch the nodes on fire?
Does it have to do either?
Yeah, that's kind of the point. It has to do one or the other. Can I do both? Well, no, it's a question, right? The question is, you can pull the constraint announcement and matching process out of the RSpec story. I think that's a fabulous thing to do, right? There's a lot of good reasons to do that. But if those constraints are real for some reason, and you sometimes need to violate them and sometimes don't, right, then you've got to have a story here for what happens. It's part of the system design, and it's right in the middle of the RSpec story. It's okay. Karen will have a response. And then Chip.
Well, no, I was actually going to go back to the last point that you put up on the slide there, which is that at the end of the day, the user verifies the resource is sufficient. If the resource is not sufficient, the user has to have recourse, otherwise it doesn't do any good. If I can't ask the question that Ted wanted to ask, which is 10 nodes that don't interfere, if I can't specify that, then the fact that I can figure out that I didn't get what I wanted doesn't do me any good. So in the end, the user has to be able to say that.
Well, then you go back to spiral N of the Gini design process and say, you just did not give me enough precision here. So on the first half of the point, deciding whether it did or did not meet your needs is an arbitrarily complex thing. It can only be solved by a chunk of code that you write, and you are the only one that can write that code.
May well be true.
And
yes.
If it did not, then you go back and very, very carefully read the term, you know, the RSpec and the terms of service or whatever as to what you were going to get. And you may discover that aggregate just puts out really bad scheduling decisions and you will never use them again. And if nobody gives you the precision that you wanted, you have to engage the community process to get to your... Right.
Then we haven't built a facility that lets people do the experiments they want to do.
Right.
Okay, so I think that's critical to actually building something that people want to be able to use, which is that if they can't ask up front for what they want and it doesn't give them what they want, then they better have some recourse. It's somewhere they have to be able to ask for what they want.
No, I don't have to give you what you want. You may have wanted something that just was not feasible.
And
or at such exorbitant cost that this is not going to happen. I mean, ultimately, this gets kicked up stairs to a, you know, it's going to take a lot of money, national priority, goes to NSF or whatever. If it's something that is solvable, then you do need but I think it's a human intensive mechanism by which you say, I just cannot get the precision that I need for this experiment, and here's why, and I think it's easy to fix. But that's going to be a human intensive endeavor, I think, isn't it?
If those attributes are in there in the RSpec, then it would be very nice if I could ask about them.
But even if, my point is, even if I could ask for them in the RSpec, that didn't mean I got them.
Okay.
I mean, you ask for...
Yes, if I ask for all the nodes in the network,
you ask for 10 million cycles a second.
Yeah.
And the RSpec allowed you to say that, and I said, yes, you've got them, but my scheduler was just not as accurate as advertised, and you didn't get your 10 million cycles a second. That's a risk you take as an experimenter that your experiment wasn't polluted by the instrument.
Right, but the question Ted was asking was not asking for something that was impossible, but for, or maybe it is impossible, if there are no wireless nodes that don't interfere with each other, then it's impossible. But if there are those nodes there, then the, you know, if I couldn't ask for that originally, just because I can figure out that I didn't get what I wanted, and I know that those resources are there, it strikes me that there's a missing link in here that I ought to be able to ask for.
Try again.
Okay.
Let me try phrasing this in this very simple e-commerce model, and then you can tell me where this differs from that, because that will clarify it for me. So it seems to me that you've broken discovery into a separate kind of process. And so in the e-commerce model, I might be looking for some red crystal vase or something. And I have any way I want of finding a universe of red crystal vases. That can be done in many, many different ways. But at some point, I'm going to take one and put it in my shopping cart and try to purchase it. You're talking about the purchasing part now. Is that correct? That this is the thing that I want, and I am going to then allocate it and get it. And if people are worried about things like there may be 100 identical nodes, well, that happens all the time in e-commerce, right? That there may be 100 identical rugs and you get one of them. Or you may decide that the rugs are all somehow different and you select the rug you want. But is this?
Yeah, I think that's consistent. This is the point at which I pay. This is the point at which I say this is what I want exactly, and the purchase is made. The request is made, the allocation is made.
And they may have just sold out, you know. Sorry,
right,
you pushed that purchase button a little too late, so you didn't
get
it.
That's right. And part of the motivation for pushing discovery out is discovery is hard, and it intrinsically has variable human inputs. And there are, I would argue, multiple sources of information. And no matter how comprehensive I made the RSpec, there would suddenly be another source of information. There's always going to be at least one more source of information about nodes that might help me decide. I see the node on Google Maps. It's visible from space. That's the one I want.
So this is not solving the problem of, like, what do you put, you know, how do you find out what to put in your shopping cart?
That's right. It's only
this is how do you click on the purchase button and get those darn things once you got them.
Right, and so that's, I think my litmus test is, did it require privilege to say, to make that sale, to say yes or no? And I still have a fairly broad notion of quote unquote resource. It could be a very logical resource, but it took privilege to give it to me.
Mm-hmm. So I think we got here in part because of your answer to the first guy. Which Ted may have heard as no names in the system or something like that. But let's try a different way of asking the same question.
There are names. The answer to the first question was you didn't say in an RSpec, give me one of five totally equivalent. You said, give me this one.
Okay. And is that always the case? Is it, I mean, because the simplest thing to do here would be that by the time you get down to RSpecs, which is the privileged operation, you're actually asking for specific resources named in some way, right? End of story. It's not that you give, you know, some high-level description that's mapped for you.
And yes, and look, it could be that as the provider of the resource, you chose to hide the duplicity of physical resources. I could tell you that you can have, that I have one processor. I'm sorry, I have one processor. Let's see if I can do this example. Through virtualization, there could have been one physical processor and I made it available generically. So I think I can hide that kind of replication in what I declare my resource to be. But at the level of the RSpec, you say which one you wanted.
So let me just say that back to you, because I think I understand what you said. But so I announced that I have one processor and its name is Larry. But
I say yes to lots of
people. But you say yes three times.
Yes, right.
Okay, and so the only trick with that is that three people get back something named Larry, and then if they, you have to somehow disambiguate later references. But yeah, okay, but so there's a, I mean, the simplest possible answer here is RSpecs are associated, when used, they're associated with concretely named things which correspond to resources, and anything higher level than that is in some other tool.
Right. This might make
composition of services or composition of slices more complicated. But that wasn't. So talking to John, I think I've made the problem harder in my head. But
don't do that.
So go to the slide about privilege.
Yeah, don't talk to John.
Don't talk to John.
I'm sorry, go to which
slide? About privilege?
Keep going.
Yeah, it's the one which says only express things that you're that require privilege. Yeah. So, no, back, number two. So, does this assume a binary level of privilege? Either you do or you don't have it. And if it's more than then yes or no, do you express sort of the different levels in the RSpec?
I don't think it's binary. I think you can acquire multiple units of the resource. So if the resource is memory, you can get multiple megabytes of it.
But you might have policies that sort of restrict. So this is a question really about privilege, but I guess because we're talking about RSpecs, the question is, are you going to represent what you can do based on who you are in the RSpec? Or are you just going to say no if you're asking for something beyond your privilege and not in?
So this is the identity of the asker?
I'm going to hand it to Ted because he understands privileges and I don't.
So I think you want to tell him none of that's in there, Larry.
None of that's in there.
Because you're just describing resources. And if I ask for a resource that I don't have the privilege to allocate, you're going to say no.
Sure.
And if I ask for... There might be some, he might advertise it somewhere else, but it's not in our spec. He might say, in order to use my privileges, you have to get the following resources, but he'd say it in Discovery. do you believe that?
I think so, for what I could hear from here, yeah.
Okay. Did I rant so loudly it didn't work?
Yeah, Larry, given, I feel like I'm looking at just a section of this, of the big picture here, and I'm wondering if you could, at least for my edification, describe a little bit where these other activities are supposed to happen, where and what kinds of structures or mechanisms might do this. Just because I think someplace in here, the question of how did we find these things was really important. What were the constraints on them, and so could you address?
So I'll try. I try to. So. I am adopting a model of the world whereby the core of the system, the control framework, does as little work as possible, punts all the complexity to the thousand flowers who are much smarter than the people defining the core. And so in fact, many of those services run in themselves in a slice of the infrastructure because they needed to have a point of presence all over the infrastructure. So an example of that is a monitoring service which might have multiple purposes. It might help me monitor my experiment as it runs, but it might also give me information that helps me choose which resources I want to include in my experiment. And so that's a separable service. It has a point of presence through which it taps into whatever instrumentation is available on the node, aggregates that back somewhere, and makes it available for querying. There's a separate service, which I would call resource discovery, that can take that information, advertised RSpecs, some high-level statement from the user as to what they want, and the matching algorithm magic happens, and you're given back a candidate RSpec, which you can then go make the request. So I've identified two services. They may, in fact, run in a slice of the whole system because they require wide distribution that I leverage to build my service or my experiment.
Can you
now, you're, I don't think I've answered.
No, I think the murky stuff.
I think the murky stuff is still, you know, how do we discover these characteristics of these resources? What resources are actually out there? I think there's lots of ways we could deploy these services through the infrastructure, and that's not really, you know, an issue I'm trying to address here. But, you know, at some point, you know, we've got this RSpec that sounds like, you know, that's what we're actually going to submit to some manager someplace to allocate. But there's a whole set of details that were here, particularly if it could be a compound or a complex structure, right, where we might have replicated other resources and we have to link interfaces together, right? So how does that stuff get resolved? Where is that supposed to be worked out if the answers are already there in the RSpec?
So as concretely as I can say it, there's a website you go to and it says, and you say to it, I want to acquire a slice. And it gives you an opportunity to say what you want in some language. And it then takes those requirements that you've given it. It's probably given you a couple examples so you know how to construct it for common kinds of questions that statements that are it's asked. And then it goes and consults a variety of information sources through which it acquires various attributes of the resources. And it runs a matching algorithm. And it maybe is iterative. It says, well, I could give you either one of these two. Do you have a preference? Oh, yeah, I want that one because it has this other characteristic I didn't realize I wanted. Certainly it splits the tie between these two choices. And when you say go, what you get back is an RSpec that you can then take and submit as a request. You may get a no answer because those resources aren't available right now. As an example, I would point you at Gush, which is one of the, or I would point you at Plush, which is the PlanetLab version of Gush.
So is there any possibility that the RSpec, you know, this document could actually function as that advertisement as well?
Oh, sure. That's
and could be annotated.
Absolutely.
Through this whole process.
The RSpecs advertised by the components or the aggregates or whoever's advertising them is a piece of the input into this matching process. It makes no sense to discover the resources and in the end of the day construct an RSpec that no one's going to accept. So it is absolutely a piece of the input. Go ahead.
Okay, Larry, can you flip to slide 7 a second?
Slide?
7.
7.
The one after your fourth rule.
This one?
Yeah, so there's this, in the middle there's sort of a stylized sequence of calls. You get resources and it gives you some default RSpec and then you create a slice. So, seems to me you should be able to say get resources and put in a an RSpec that you describe as your maximal thing and get back maybe the subset that you can actually get now with the privileges you supplied or something. Is that the way you envision this working?
It would be allowed. It certainly would be within scope for you to put together an unrealistically aggressive RSpec and ask for that. And the answer you will get back is either, well, I can't give you that, but here's what I can give you. Or it might be, forget it, you need to start over and ask me something reasonable. And I don't care. I don't have anything to say either way.
Okay. So let me posit a mechanism. So
you understand what I've done here. The model here is when I write an aggregate, we've written one for Vinny. And you can imagine all kinds of networks you want to embed into Vinny. And so there's a very, very long set of potential RSpecs. And rather than write the policy machinery to decide which one of those to support and say yes to, we've done the simpler thing, which is we have constructed the one answer we know how to say yes to. And that's what we return with the first call. It's the default. And today, I only understand the default. So when you say that back to me, we say, yes, I'll give you the default. And if you change the default in any way, we will say no.
Okay. So this would work. You could say get resources something else, and you would get back the default one, potentially.
Well, potentially, it could be the default. But either it exactly matches what we gave you, in fact, as simple as we could just run a...
Yeah, so I mean, well, the way I think about it, there's a lattice of all the things that might exist that you could get. And right now, the only points on the lattice you can get are the default and zero.
Yes.
You're getting nothing.
Yes.
Okay. So it would be really
nice. And tomorrow,
when
I give you back that no answer and you say, but wait a minute, I had this really important experiment to run and I needed 10 megabits instead of one, we might augment our policy engine so that if we get back, we'll still give you the same default with one. But if we happen to get one with 10 and we see it's from you, we'll say yes.
Okay.
And I've just grown my first little tiny bit of policy.
Yeah, so I'm there's a sort of sorting out of what privileges you're using. Okay. So there seems to be a small gap in the interface in terms of you can't say tell me what I could get with this some subset.
Yeah,
I mean,
there's many points in between that. This is just a first cut.
Okay.
But it gives me the right place to go start adding stuff. So last comment.
Okay. Could you go back to the rule number one? Could you go back to the rule number one? I'm wondering if single RSpec will be used for describing both user requirement and resource capability. It seems to me that RSpec describing user requirement and describing resource capability will require different characteristics.
I'm not sure if this is going to answer, but it is certainly possible to leverage the minimal RSpec as a subset of or as a foundation for expressing researcher needs and or device properties. I just don't want to restrict it to that. So if you were out there to build a matching service, you might very well, let's assume there's a legitimate RSpec definition at that time, and it allows for extensibility as it should. You might very well try to build your expansive language out of that and have the RSpec specific stuff just be a subset, but then you can add all kinds of other attributes and properties to it, and I can add very high level abstract requests to it as well. Those are certainly natural extensions, and that's why it's so tempting to try to put them into the RSpec. Not only do I have megabits per second, but I have latitude and longitude. It's just another attribute. So it's very natural to stick those in there. I just to scope the problem, I would argue that is that's a different exercise than defining the RSpec.